What?
Nothing. Hey, Jersey. Jersey Drost.
Hey.
Comics are great.
Comicsaregreat.com. And hey, look at that guy. Look at that guy right underneath me on the Google Plus Hangout right there, everybody. That's Mr. Rob Stenzinger. He's got his beard back, and he's looking warmer and friendlier and sweeter than ever. The beard works for you, Rob. It really does. Interactive-storyteller.com, by the way. I should say that.
Mm-hmm. Interactive-beardedstoryteller.com also. No, not actually.
Are you recording, by the way? Please tell me you're recording. You did it, right?
I am not. But my recording is going to begin with you laughing. So that's cool.
That's the right way to start something. It's the right way to start your day every day. So, okay. Yes, this is the Lean Into Art cast for those who are new to the show, where two visual storytellers, cartoonists, teaching artists, and in Rob's case, a game designer and HTML5 developer, we get together and we wrap our brains around really annoying and needling topics that we just can't shake out. It's not necessary that we get to some kind of definitive conclusion. What's really interesting is walking around the thing and trying to piece it together like a Zen garden of art topics. How was that? Was that too pretentious, Rob?
It depends on where you buy your Zen garden. I think if it's a gas station one, it's fine. So if it's from, like, I don't know, Crate and Barrel.
Okay. What?
No offense to Crate and Barrel. They have many fine products, but you know, that's a pretentious one.
But if I get it at, like a street vendor in San Francisco, is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. That's more legit.
And you got to get the, those hand exercise spheres.
What, those little guys that you squeeze and then his eyes pop out? That guy?
Those. Well, yeah, those two. But
you're talking about those, like, those little, it's like, looks like two bike handles on a spring that you squeeze like this, right? That were popular in the 80s?
No, what are those? It's like a hand exercise. I keep avoiding saying the word balls, but they chime a little bit, and the point is to try to
move them
in your hands without having them touch. It's a good exercise, actually.
Like Labyrinth.
Oh, geez. No, not like the wavy one, whatever. I tried to watch that movie recently. Oof.
Oh, no. No, you didn't. That's like my favorite Jim Henson movie. Oh,
really? I knew there was a reason why I took a swing at it. I may have to try it again. It's kind of tough to watch. I don't know.
Oh, man. Is it because of David Bowie's outfit? It's because of David Bowie's outfit, isn't it?
No, there was a lot of funny things. It just was, maybe it was the whole, the style of the protagonist or something that I just really couldn't get into at first.
I'm marking this one. This one is going to be a topic. We're both going to unbox Labyrinth together and find out what didn't appeal to you and why I think it's one of the finest fantasy films ever made.
Cool. Randomly. I'm willing to chew on that.
You know, I would be the first to admit that probably what I love about it is what a lot of people would probably not like about it, in that the thematic elements are very loud. It is very, very clear what the story is about. The aboutness is barfed out of the characters, but I think it's done in a really interesting and fun way. But another time, we got to get the curveball. So yes, this art show where we talk about art topics and try to wrap a brain around them, and now we do them live over Google Plus Hangouts so that you guys can, the folks who show up to the live streams can participate in the discussion with us. By the way, we do this every Tuesday now at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So we usually start with a curveball where, I got to remember what the curveball was now. Oh, I know what it is. And it's less of a curveball, but more about, like, trying to unbox something that we were talking about just before we started recording, Rob. You know?
Yeah.
Okay, without going into great detail, rough week. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, without going into detail about my life, you know, stuff happened in my life this past week that made it very difficult for me to put myself at the desk and get the work done, because when you're emotionally distracted by difficulties, right, stuff happens. Like, the sink broke. Oh, my God, I got to deal with that. Or my car needs work. Or, oh, I got to go get a root canal tomorrow. Or, you know, my girlfriend's mad at me. I just got a note from a doctor. They said that lump may be something. It may not be something. All kinds of things. can happen to distract you, and it makes it difficult to focus and you know, give your full attention to the desk.
Certainly.
And yet, you know, a professional, to quote Ron Friedman, great cartoon writer, said, a professional does it on command, on demand, to which I'm going to play I'm going to play the advocate for the listener who hears those words and goes, oh, great. You know, you just told me that no matter how tough it is, I still got to do it. How do you do it? Right? How do you get into that creative zone when you are emotionally burnt out? You've had a rough week and all you want to do is unplug for a while. But when you are an ambitious artist, and let's face it, any of us who have any ambition in visual arts are probably doing it on the side in addition to whatever's working for us financially, right? So we're logging in hours that we don't, that normal people, you know, have as leisure hours. We're logging those hours in as work hours. That means you got to stay plugged in longer. And so you told me the story about, you know, so like we had our weekly thing where we text each other, hey, what are we going to talk about this week? And then I cheerfully text Rob, you know, I pick up my phone, I'm like, hey, Rob, oh, I'm looking forward to talking to you tonight. What are we going to talk about tonight? And Rob looks at his phone, what did you do?
I made a very Krusty the Clown like sound. I went, because it's let's see. I'm familiar with being in that position, needing to just, you know, be on and switch it on. But also, I mean, sometimes I'm a little tired to reach for the switch, you know? And and so even thinking about going through the stress of like, well, okay, I want us to have a great show every single time we do it. And I know it's awesome to chew through topics with you and I think we've been, we've been practicing, you know, this show with you and I for about a year now. And I think it's been, evolving, and I like how it's evolving, and I want to honor that and bring the best I can to it. Right. But all of a sudden with those expectations comes more stress. And yeah. So sometimes, one thing I do is I try to, here's one of the reasons why I take a lot of notes is it's a resource to mine when I'm drained. Okay. And, so let's see, as I showed Jersey when we were talking, on camera before the show started, I reached into my physical Evernote, which is stacks and stacks of note cards. And, they're across different things. Like I've got, you know, a set that's on game design, right? And so a lot of these are where I want to take my class next and whatnot. And some of them are captured electronically, whatever. So if I reached into this and I didn't find anything, I would have just went to my Evernote and then kept, you know, so anyway, I've got a lot of materials to mine basically, mm-hmm. and dig up something to save my butt from being, you know, so I can be burned out yet useful.
Yep.
Not useless and burned out. There you go.
Yeah. And there's been jobs I've done as an illustrator. And there's also been episodes of the Comics Are Great show that I've done where I am not feeling it that day. You know, we've talked about this a bunch of times in the past. No, I have my idea capturing device right here.
Nice.
You know, this is that thing I was telling you about last week where look at
fancy.
This. Very fancy. So you open it up and then you keep all your cards in a.
Does it have a pocket for Grey Poupon inside there?
There's actually a pocket where you can put like your credit cards and things, but I just keep nice. Business cards in there, and then pencil, and there's blank cards there, and then it gets strapped onto the back for capturing ideas. I think this nice is one. $20, something like that. Anyway, but you know, it's like we talked about this a bunch of times on the show about like, you know, when you're teaching, you don't get to, well, I don't feel that I have the opportunity or the right to walk in and go, you know, kids, I'm not feeling it today. I'm going to sit over here and drink a cup of coffee. Just do something fun. I got to go in there and I got to be the same energetic guy I was the last time. Why? Because I owe it to the students. the students expect me to be inhuman a little bit, right? Think about when you would catch your teacher at the grocery store, right? It was always weird. You're like, they buy food? They have cars, right? So there's like this certain kind of expectation that's put upon the teacher, at least in my mind.
Sure. They occupy a symbol and a role as opposed to like a complete existence.
Right. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And also, I mean, there's real advantages to that, but we don't need to go into that here. But the thing is like you also talked about, like, yeah, Evernote is my brain in the sky. I do the same thing. Evernote is the place where I capture a lot of random things that may be useful to me down the road. But also, I mean, this thinking exercise, there's two reactions that you have an opportunity for when you're burnt out and then a creative challenge is put in front of you. Is that, and I'm right there with you, Rob, with the whole, oh, you know, not now. You know, I need a cup of coffee and an episode of the Transformers before I can be good to anybody. Or you can use it as an opportunity to quickly think on your feet and prove to yourself that you got the stones to do this stuff on a regular basis. So here was the curveball. So there's a long wind up to this curveball. I'm gonna throw some random topics at you, and we're gonna demonstrate how no matter how bad a week that you've had, or no matter how tired you are, you can think your way out of a corner by virtue of the limitation of the word itself, right? So by me throwing a word at you, you're going to have to figure out a vector into what would we talk about that. So if I were to say, hey, Rob, penciling, make an episode out of that.
Totally.
What would be your vector of approach?
Well, I think of when you say penciling, I think of how the process is. You can divide up the process of delivering a creative product into stages to address different concerns that each concern you have about the end product, you can tackle as a smaller problem that adds up to an overall complete solution.
Hey, Rob.
So penciling would be a part of that.
So what about yellow?
Let's see. Yellow reminds me that there are there's different cultural meanings to color. There isn't anything universal about it. And I came across a resource a few months back that is it's a pretty cool data visualization and a kind of a map of how different cultures see color throughout the world. And yellow has a different meaning depending on where you're from.
One more. I'm going to say hosting.
Hosting? Okay. I think hosting is a big problem for a lot of people who put together you want to get the word out for what you do, and you want to have a place on the internet that's your platform to get to share your services and the things you make. And hosting is an important part of it, but oftentimes it can be this light touch afterthought sort of thing that can get in the way, and it's worth thinking about what you need for hosting to make it less in the way, make it more part of accomplishing what you want to accomplish.
Okay, so awesome. First of all, well done, Rob. That was awesome. I did not tell you I was going to do that, and yet
no.
Rob, the brave soul, he just doesn't flinch when I start throwing this stuff at him. That's so great. But here's what you did in all those situations. That's so great. And this models what we're doing when we're trying to solve the problems of a visual story, is you take a word, you make some associations, and then you evaluate what are the problems and what are the solutions? What are the things that this word and the associations that I make with it, what problems do they solve? So when I think about different colors and the way different, when I think of the word yellow, it makes me think of how different people interpret colors differently and how would we leverage that to solve different kinds of problems. Penciling, how I would talk about the different stages of delivery of different kinds of penciling to solve certain problems. When I think about hosting, I think about, you know, people wanting a platform to deliver a message, and then even digging down deeper into do you have a message or not, and do you necessarily need hosting for the kind of message that you're trying to convey. You identified first an association and then a problem with which to attack through that association, right? That's topic generation. And that's why we never run out of topics, right? It's like some people think like, oh, well, you know, it's like I might want to do a show like this, but I don't know what I would talk about. Dude, word association. That's all it really is. And that, and then once you've done that a couple times, like Rob, I'm guessing, like, just like monitor your emotional state. That felt pretty good to be able to get out of those entanglements, right?
Like, exactly. So part of it too, it's the, there's the, even though I was, you know, feeling, you know, pretty spent, but at the, I also am familiar with taking this journey and going through the, and receiving the benefits from tackling these stresses, mm-hmm. which it's exciting and very satisfying to go through the exercise and, do something, I don't know, constructive with facing that challenge.
Yep.
Feels good. It's addictive.
So cool. Well, thanks for playing along with that one, Rob. That wasn't exactly a curveball, but it was kind of. It was along. It's what we hope to accomplish with curveballs at any rate. And it just goes to show that this whole notion of anybody who says, like, well, I don't have any ideas for a story, or I don't have any ideas for this problem or for a topic of discussion. Oh, I'm going to go teach a class. I don't know what to teach. Wow, really? Pick a word and start from there, right? Even if it's arbitrary.
Sure. It can be super daunting when you haven't gone through that, your first attempt at surmounting that challenge, though, when you haven't seen yourself transition through whatever that exercise is and then live, right? it can be scary, but at the same time, it is really common. I mean, businesses do this, and, you know, like when they're thinking like, oh, we should have a blog, or we should have a podcast, or we should do something, and then like just kind of run out of ideas. And some of that could be follow through and discipline, or, you know, setting aside the time to do it. But I think a lot of times it's not embracing it, that whole problem solving angle, finding, you know, a topic generation approach that just works. And it's in it, once you do it, it's like this, it's a little monster generator.
Yeah.
Like the things in Gauntlet that spit out little goblin dudes.
Remember, don't shoot food.
<That's>, exactly. You get chastised for shooting the food.
And you know, I live by those words every day. anyway, okay, well, and that's a signal that eventually we need to do an episode about, like, you know, what we think about when we think about doing shows, right? But that could be for later time, because we have a bit of a topic that we're gonna see if there's any legs in there. Let me open up my messaging app. What did I whine at you about this time, Rob? What am I gonna reveal about myself this week that is gonna make me uncomfortable?
Oh, let's see.
Here we go.
As I open up my own copy of the application. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This one may make us groan, but, you know, we shall see.
Oh, groan with recognition and anticipation for how do we surmount this one?
Okay. Well. So I texted you a couple weeks ago, and it's been still been, and I thought, well, let me just put it in the rock polishing drum that is my mind and let it tumble around for 45 minutes to 2 weeks and see if it turns into an actual topic, or if it's just something where I made a note of a weird feeling I had that I can't quite pin down, and perhaps I should go see somebody with a more professional training to find out what's going on in that skull of mine. I made the realization that, you know, some cool stuff's been happening in my life this year, and there's a couple more cool things happening that I'll report about later. And the part that makes me say cool, the part that makes me say like, oh, I'm glad that happened, is, and we talked about this when I came back from ALA, I think, a sense of connectedness, feeling connected to something, feeling like I'm participating in something, feeling like that I'm contributing to a larger thing. That is... I got the feeling that was more important to me than actually being famous. Like, I don't sit at home and visualize being famous as a goal in and of itself. I don't sit at home and go like, oh, here's my 5-step plan, and at step 5, I'm famous. You know, but being connected and being involved in something is way more important to me, which made me go, oh, I don't know if I'm comfortable with that idea. You know, it's like you can say that and it sounds like, ah, he's sticking it to the man because he doesn't want to follow that Western ideal of becoming rich and famous and having his picture taken in tabloid newspapers and everybody follow him around and everybody worships him as he's some kind of god, and I can go out onto these tirades about how people shouldn't be vaccinated and a bunch of people will listen to me, you know. Good for Jersey. He's breaking that stereotype and that tradition that people erroneously follow. Well, here's where, if you're saying that, dear listener, dear viewer, here's where I've got complicated news for you as far as my interpretation of that statement, is that it made me say, gosh, does that mean that I'm more interested in playing a role than pursuing a goal, right? And I don't know if I like that very much, right? Because like I thought of myself as a goal-oriented person. But anyway, I'll pitch it over to you now, Rob, and see if there's anything in what I just said that is worthy of investigation as we try to pick this apart. And I'm wondering how you feel about that statement. Like, you know, the whole participation in a movement over achieving some kind of status.
Well, I mean, I'm hoping at some point we could do some crowd surfing, right? I mean, that's part of why you do this, is to like jump into the crowd and like get caught and not, you know, hit the floor. Like I remember happening in one concert ages ago when, the lead singer of one of the opening bands was being kind of insulting to the crowd and somehow felt the chutzpah to actually jump into the crowd at some point, probably when it was just scheduled during the set. Like, okay, checklist, you know, song 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, jump off the stage after song 5 or whatever, or at the, you know, guitar solo, and no one caught him. I'm not saying the band's name on purpose. So, I think there's a bunch of interesting things there. I think it'd be tough to avoid an interesting topic. It'd be tough to say like something that was stuck on your mind, made you curious, and you chewed on for a bit and then didn't seem to fully process it. There's likely a topic in there, right? And so I think that's one indicator, a sign of quality that I think it's worth running toward.
Obsessiveness? Obsessiveness is a sign of... No, I know what you're saying, Rob.
I suppose. Well, if you were saying... Yeah, if it depends on what you're obsessing about. If you're like, you know, cleaning, yeah, I don't know what to say. It's like if it's a dusting thing, then maybe not. But if it's a creative topic, anyway. But then I think this hits on a few different themes that I think are pretty that come up a lot for people who choose a creative path, where you have how am I going to be providing the service and how many people will acknowledge it? And then how successful will I be? And why am I doing it? Is it because of the act of pursuing this? And I'm so satisfied about the art that I create and this is what is important. Or is it to have a relationship with an audience? And then that could be kind of similar, where you just maybe enjoy being a teaching artist and finding people who want to elect you as a teaching artist, that they want your services and stuff. Which can hone in on the part of like, well, what are you trying to get known for in your path? And is it about the business aspect? And some people feel really guilty about the business aspect and will say like, oh, is it just about the money? Or so motivation plays a part, and then fame, recognition. I think that's a pretty darn common human thing. Like someone needs to recognition of each other. Like we organize in different ways, right? We organize around different topics. We organize around where we live, and we organize around the people that we know who are interested in things we're interested in. People organize. And then once they do, there's different, well, that's what Seth Godin calls tribes. And there's, then there's different roles within the tribe.
But here's like a monkey wrench to throw into this. Like you talk about, you know, like you implicitly in there was like stuff about business goals and having a sense of what you're trying to accomplish, who you're trying to service, right?
Yep.
I can't say that that's actually going on in my head when I'm performing a thing, like whether I'm making a comic or, and I'm anticipating that some people are going to say like, don't even think about the audience, just make a good comic, right? But even when I'm doing like public speaking, like so I'm on some panels at ALA and I'm just contributing to a panel discussion and all I'm thinking about is the interesting discussion that's going on between me and the other panelists. At no time do I ever think about, and I'm saying this not to try to paint myself in any kind of glorious light here. I'm saying this as a weakness, is that I'm not thinking about positioning myself in any way. I'm not thinking about, oh, here'd be a good opportunity to bring up Comics Are Great and throw out that link to the audience after I just said something really intelligent, right? I'm not thinking about the opportunities of promoting myself, right, and being a good promoter. To the point where there was an event that I attended earlier this year where I met a guy of some influence in some circles that I want to, you know, get into. And that guy went on to talk with someone else I know in the teaching field. And my name came up in the discussion because the other person knows me too. And the guy who I met, okay, so the influential guy said, oh, Jersey Droz does that? That's funny. I didn't get the impression from him that he was that involved in this scene or that he had that much importance in this scene. And so this friend of mine reported that back to me and said, dude, why do you not promote yourself more? You know, and I thought about it. I was like, I don't think about it at the time. You know, it's like, I wonder if I'm not clever enough. And so I thought of that when I thought of this expression of like, it's more important for me to feel connected to a scene than it is for me to be famous. And so I wondered if that was like an unhealthy thing. This is where I'm going to overthink stuff again, like last week. And then I swear to God, we're going to put these episodes to bed where we just analyze me. But I'm wondering if other people struggle with this kind of thing, you know, or if I'm just neurotic.
Can we just say yes? No, sorry, that's the easy, cheap thing to say.
That was a cheap joke, Rob.
I know, exactly. But honestly, because I say this about myself too, I think it's a common weakness for a lot of people just starting out in business in general. And I see some people embracing it in the, maybe it has to do with whether if you're naturally extroverted or not. But I think it also ties back to motivation too, and how personal you feel about your art. And that's just my own take on it. Where it's easy to get hung up on that, on negative examples of how you've seen some people self-promote and feeling like that's not a comfortable thing to do, where, yeah, because there's people who don't have they haven't been welcomed into a tribe or asked, hi, welcome to our tribe. What do you do? It's just all about imposing. This is what I do. No matter where they are, what the context is, there's no nuance. It's all, trying to close a deal even when there's no one dealing.
Oh man, I met a guy a while back who he could not turn it off. I know the guy you're talking about, and you could be sitting there just talking to him about anything, and he would have this kind of this thing going on where he's leaning in like this, and it had like this whole like, what do I gotta do to seal the deal here on this point I'm making about a casual conversation? Like, dude, turn it off. Be a person.
Yeah. Exactly. But at the same time, you know what? I argue that too for me because I'm heavily interested in, well, let's think about what motivates you. I like to build things, and I like to build things that help people and whatnot, mm-hmm, and help entertain and educate. That's what I love to do. And it's nearly an obsession as far as like if, and maybe for some people, closing the deal, it feels the same part of their existence, right? Where it's just so important for them to do that. I don't know. I'm not trying to just devil's advocate there. I'm trying to question that maybe by emphasizing the creative aspect versus the communicating and distribution aspect of a creative ecosystem, it's just, it creates just a different perspective with a little bit of biases that come with it. I don't know.
So the question remains is that what I was trying to do here is take that conversation we had a couple episodes ago about feeling connected to something and how awesome that is and how that can be a salve to help us be more outgoing, you know, in engaging with other people, because we feel like, oh, I've got skin in this game. You people know that I've got skin in this game. So it's easier for me to jump in and engage, right? It's like, I was just talking with Krishna Sadasivam and Jamie Gamble on Twitter the other day, and Krishna posted, he said, you know, some people just use Twitter as a bullhorn. And he says, I use it for engagement. And it always confuses me when people just use it as a bullhorn. And I didn't know what he was responding to when he said that. So I said something like, well, maybe it's hard for people to strike up conversations, you know, because it is, you know, you start following groups of people and you don't know if it's okay for you to get involved in there, or you don't know the context of that discussion maybe, or even the context of what that relationship is between those two people. So how do you get involved in there? And once you've met them in person and then you've got like some kind of like a sense of connectedness to whatever mission that they represent or they're involved in, or whatever scene in quotes that they're involved in, you may feel like, okay, now I can engage because there's some kind of like a trust has been established of some sort. Where was I going with that? But I wanted to flip it on its head and say, well, but you know, as good as that feeling is, there's the business relationship stuff that you got to do as well. And I feel like I'm coming up short on that sometimes because I hear you typing. Are you adding to your brain in the sky?
I guess I'm scribbling so hard with this pencil, it sounds like typing.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. But anyway, so, you know, it's like, perhaps I'm creating a false dichotomy. Perhaps I'm saying that like these things aren't mutually exclusive. But what scared me was that by saying this lovely little thought of like, it's more important for me to be connected to a scene than to be famous, is that an admission that I don't think enough about business goals and saying in 5 years I'm going to be here. Not necessarily famous, but when you use the word famous, I'm just using that as a placeholder word, a generic term, a white label word for place you wish to be in 5 years, right? Let me ask you, do you think about it that way? Do you put yourself in like a 5-year goal plan? Do you say like, this is where I'm going to be in X amount of time?
I do on a semi-regular basis, I do longer term goal planning, and every year I do yearly goal planning, and every month and every week and every day. I think there's a lot of thematic connection between what you're describing and the just kind of the dynamics of like what part you want to occupy in a tribe, right? Mm-hmm. And I think motivation plays a big factor. I'm debating tackling the tribe angle because I also wrote another note earlier about motivation for goals. And then how do you characterize goals? Because I think there's two different really important flavors of goals.
Well, let's hear them.
I think there are goals that are what we commonly think of them. They're a waypoint. They're a known complete destination versus then there are ways. And I don't mean to just get all, Tao Te Ching or whatnot, but I think there's things that are habits that are ongoing, and there's things that are measurable as having passed.
Yeah.
Or yeah, I mean, and the kind of the evidence of one, yeah, it's interesting. They interrelate. And ages ago, when I prototyped my own goal planning system thing, called, I called it personal evolution, but evidently there's another guy who used that word before me. And then he passed away after copywriting it or handing it to his family and all that stuff. So it's really, but I still think it's an awesome phrase. And I think it's worth, you know, investigating the stuff that that dude wrote actually publicly. But anyway, and I think it's a neat phrase, personal evolution. I characterize goals as that because there's things that you want to just be as part of your experience day in, day out. And then it's like you have a confidence of like, am I doing this useful thing for this group? And there's no like, and am I able to do that useful thing? Have I become someone who has a habit of often doing that? That's like my way, right? Versus I'm going to do this one specific project for this group. This group meaning my audience. I'm going to make a comic that makes people want to, you know, scream awesome and jump on their couch when they read it.
Right. You're reminding me of that. I should pull it up. I think it's Pixar's 22 Rules of Phenomenal Storytelling. Do you know what I'm talking about? I posted it on Google Plus recently.
Yeah.
Let me pull it up real quick. And there's one of them. One of the rules is like it basically describes the structure of a story by saying once there was a person who did this and because of this that happened. Here, I'm pulling it up now. So, yeah. And I'll put a link to this in the show notes. But one of the rules of the storytelling is, oh, for corn's sake, why can I not find it now? But I'll link to it in the show notes. But anyway, you're reminding me of this, like the way goal is the action. By doing this, waypoint happens, mm-hmm. right?
Which maybe you're not equipped yet to do that action. So I still think it's worth tracking as a kind of goal.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, as far as why did I call it a kind of goal? Because it still may be an action that you're working on being able to perform.
Ooh, interesting. That's good. That's good. So, but, so for instance, to model what you just described by me becoming involved in teaching comics, I will achieve, here's waypoint one, alternate stream of income for my freelance career, right?
Mm-hmm.
Waypoint two, I will have reached X number of kids who will be exposed to my work and thereby discovering new audiences to speak to, right? Waypoint three, get on some kind of wider public speaking circuit to generate more extra income for myself and promote myself as an independent author with a book that I want to get to audiences. Those are the waypoints. The way is how I do it. When I started, I didn't know where to start. I just started approaching libraries saying, hey, do you want to do a workshop? You know? So my waypoints were there, but I hadn't gotten to my way yet. Is that what you're describing? Did I model this properly or did I get it goofed?
So we're having some vocabulary collision because like saying waypoints would be like a goal. That's like a crystallized, you know, it occurred. Uh-huh. Whereas there is more of a verb, an action thing to the ways, right? Because it's not a destination in and of itself. It's just a way of being, right? So I have become someone who's comfortable with public speaking, right? Uh-huh. So become comfortable with public speaking. Sure, you can say it's a goal in and of itself, but it's not like you get to just stop doing it once you got there. You're just always going to be doing it.
Okay.
So it's sort of a permanent habit thing also. But I do think you were describing it in your explanation. I just was trying to pick it apart just a little bit to highlight the difference between a waypoint, which would be a goal, and then a way of being, which would be the ongoing habits that you need to keep getting to those goals.
So do you when you sit down and visualize your goals, like I know you've talked in the past about you and Kate will sit down and do like some giant whiteboarding right?
Mm-hmm. Or yeah, giant post-it notes, actually.
Giant post-it notes of figuring out where you want to be in, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 36 mm-hmm. months, whatever. How often do you revisit that? I mean, like, are you sitting down and actually, like, visualizing? Like, I think about, like, things like, you know, studies done where, and I remember studying this in high school psychology class, where you have, like, the two groups of basketball players, and one group of basketball players practiced for an hour every day, and the other group thought about practicing for an hour every day, and, like, it turned out that you just visualizing practicing actually had a positive effect. I don't remember if it was as good.
They did a shorter practice session and also visualized.
Okay, that's what it was.
So it wasn't replacing practice. It's just that visualization does have a positive effect. And then a whole industry of, we're so dancing on the guru line.
I know.
We're just, I've been debating myself on this before too, where I don't think, I think they can provide a very valuable service. And it depends on where you're at. And I think earlier in my studies, I certainly depended on gurus more. And because they're really approachable and have wonderful ways of marketing and whatnot. And it just seems so potentially useful. And then you learn by your own experience. And then you know when to let go of a guru and all that stuff. So I don't know. They can help.
How much? Oh, I'm looking at the chat now. First of all, Chaos Angel's in there, and he's saying, and making, getting a chuckle out of the fact that I keep saying "for corn's sake." Look, guys, when you're a teacher and you work with kids, you learn to not use swears. I mean, I normally don't swear anyway, but that was one that I picked up from "I Love Lucy." Fred Mertz says "for corn's sake," and so I've adopted that, and it is really just a reflex now. I don't say that to be funny. It's when you're around me enough, that actually gets quite annoying, but. Chaos Angel's asking, how much should you wager on a waypoint? Is your future even?
I think it might be, linger on a waypoint wait or yeah.
Linger on a waypoint. Is your future uncertain?
Okay. Here's the thing. Two other thoughts I had that I think relate to this question, and I don't mean to just steamroller you here, Jersey, but, that tie into what you were, there's different stages. Like you mentioned the penciling part of the challenge, the curveball where you had yellow and pencil and all penciling and all this stuff. And
yeah, I was being a hippie.
In penciling, it's a, I responded by dividing, you know, saying like, oh, okay, you have a bigger process. You divide it into smaller things or whatnot. So when you are performing a service to your tribe that you're trying to reach out to or collection of tribes or whatever, there's a, you're not just wearing one hat, and you may be at one time, but maybe you divide your week up into, you know what, Mondays, I am going to practice marketing myself. I'm going to wear this hat. That's part of the part of the overall system of my business. I'm not just one thing in this system. I am the whole system. I need to make sure that it continues to function as it, and allows me to reach my whatever. I keep using business. I don't mean just plain old business. I mean your whole your existence as an independent creative, which does involve business. Because as who mentioned earlier in the chat, someone talked about you need to pay for groceries and whatnot, and exactly, which is why I incorporate that as part of the picture. Because if you just separate, there's just the pure art, and I only do it for that. Cool, but you have to eat somehow. And that's what I mean about being systemic about it. And it's not just like I get to wear one or sit in one point in this system or only wear one hat. It's like, I need to rotate through them and keep the system moving. Mm-hmm. So another way to look at that is, let's see. So for me, lingering on a waypoint, you're going through the you need to keep observing where you're at, and it's up to you to just keep adjusting where you're going to go next. There is no like, I mean, and I'm way dancing on the guru line.
I know. It's like, okay, if more than 4 days, move on, you know, more than 2 days. Here's the three easy steps. Look at the amount of days, count the amount of days. If it's over 4 days, move on. Right. Like that, exactly. That's what would be in a good SEO site would have that kind of article about it.
Oh gosh. What did the, there's like a Seth Godin book called the Dip. Mm. There's someone who's he's pretty good at being a guru and whatnot.
He's awesome at it. His little tiny blog posts with like his thought of the day are like classic guru stuff. Engineered to inspire you to face the day with newfound courage, right? And I say that with like a little bit of, you know, of a sardonic attitude, but at the same time, you know, it's like I'm totally victim of that stuff. I cry when I watch certain movies, so.
Okay, so does that kind of are we actually doing anything to progress on your topic, Jersey?
I don't know. I tell you, I mean, and you know what? It's not important to me that we really get a system of answers out of this thing. Like I said at the top, what's interesting to me is that every opportunity to congratulate yourself is interwoven with the opportunity to second guess yourself. That's like the first observation is, right? It's like I could sit there and go like, you know, I'm so awesome because I don't want to be famous. I'd rather be part of a scene, right? But then that makes me go, wait, is that bad, you know? But this kind of models the whole notion of reflection. And we did a talk a couple weeks ago on the KRC wrap-up episode where it's really good to reflect on what you're thinking and what you're engaged with and what you're creating to evaluate if you're heading in a direction that you want to head. But also, you know, it's, I guess I'm not, after listening to you, I'm not convinced that, a pursuit of a word like fame, and I'm again throwing in the word fame just as a placeholder word, put in any word like making $100,000 a year, having X amount of super fans, right? I'm not sure that being part of a scene is exclusive from that goal. It could be that after listening to you, what my observation is that perhaps I was looking too intently at one, thinking that the other one was exclusive from that. But I think that now can I leverage the first one, the being part of a scene, toward the second one, right? And can that be done in a natural human way rather than in the kind of the guy who I was alluding to earlier who couldn't shut it off, right? It was what do I got to do to get you into this conversation?
Well, I am wondering if can they relate in a systemic way, which I think that's along the lines of what you're summarizing.
Yeah.
But whether one leads to the other or whether they just can coexist, because fame, I mean, you could just say that you're known for helping the tribe with a given thing. Like you mentioned, speaking on a circuit and all that, right? Well, that means becoming of service to a group of people that need to, they need providers of that service. Well, you've got to find them and know them. They've got to know you exist. And you know what? Everyone's famous to somebody, right? I'm pretty famous to my wife, right? that's probably pretty corny, but you have to be known to be providing that thing in order for someone to reach out to you to say, please, you know, provide that to me. Here's some money. Go get some groceries.
Yes, Angel is asking in the chat, how much personal investment should you put into your waypoint? Oh, God, I don't know if we could really, that goes back to that whole thing, like whatever you feel that you can afford, right? And whatever you feel that it is worth it to you to that waypoint, right? It's like, but you know, it's like, here's another like totally, I think this is semi-related to what we're talking about, but I just today started watching out of morbid curiosity, this show called Shark Tank, is that it? It's an ABC show. It's one of those stupid reality shows where contestants come in and they get yelled at by a guy and then they feel bad about it. And everybody likes to watch because of the Schadenfreude thing. And the premise is that there's like these guys who are all like and one gal who are all rich people who will listen to you make a pitch for your business, and you're asking for them to invest in your business, and then you negotiate a deal, right? And some of the people come in and like they clearly don't have any kind of sense of how the business, they haven't thought about the business angle. They're just like, oh, it's a neat thing, I want to make it. I'm like, well, how many orders do you have? Do you have any distribution? No, I haven't even thought about that yet. Well, then you have no business here, get out, you're stupid. And then another guy will come in, he has a great idea, he's got X amount of orders, he's got all these distribution deals going on, and then they negotiate this deal and everything. And, you know, it's like when I saw that, it kind of set off more of those alarm bells in my head. First of all, it's you know, it's just a dumb reality show, but it set off those alarm bells of, you know, it's not enough to just say, this is a cool thing that I want to make. Is it also that you have to, oh, God, I don't even know if I'm making a point here, Rob. This is a whole big messy ball of noodles here with. You know, some people say just make a story that you're passionate about and dump all your passion into it, and it will find its audience, right? But then there's also like you talk about servicing a crowd, and you got to be known in order to service that crowd, right? And don't you got to think about who it is you're trying to serve? What pain point are you hitting with your thing? And so, in like that Shark Tank show, if that indeed is what it's called, chat room, help me out.
Sounds cool.
You know, they make a big case out of you got to have your audience first before you can get anybody to invest in you. You have to have, you know, customers, you have to have distribution, you have to have orders, you have to have clients in order for an investor to invest in you. And is that not a metaphor to this thing that you were talking about of like you have to be known in order to be providing a service? I don't know if I'm really saying anything there except saying that this is a big, messy, sticky ball that I can't unravel. And I don't think it is as simple as saying like just pour your heart into a thing, and if you believe in it, other people will too eventually. No, that's not a given. Nobody's guaranteed that.
Excuse me. It's easy to get overwhelmed as with things that aren't familiar.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, no kidding, right? It's let's see. So something something I do professionally is, well, user experience design. So I go in and I understand businesses and spaces that I had no idea about before. I needed to study them to understand how they operate and who they're serving and stuff. And I think it's through that experience where I started to appreciate that, there's so many different models, and I think it's just important to find, well, make your own model and grow it. That's it. It's completely valid for the artist who is, who doesn't have the giant business plan, but has just enough savvy to know how to both be making some, but they have thought of it in systemically enough where they can make their creative goods and put food on the table. They've completed the cycle, right? They've got the working, you know, I can be of service to a tribe and whatever. Would their business hold up to all the same scrutiny with someone with different motivations who would say that, well, is that really a business because your market is only of this size and I choose not to observe that as a business because I need to make a greater percentage return on my investment. And that's completely valid for them, but they've created a different model. And all they're saying is like, you know, Megatron beats Optimus, or you're saying, you know, Bumblebee wins, or it's who cares? Nobody's honestly, nobody's wrong in that situation, except someone who's just saying that, you know, I would argue against someone who isn't trying to look at it systemically, but that's about the only one I would argue against. And I would say, you know, someone who's not doing it for the same, like if someone came around and said, oh, okay, lean into art, time to buck up and get that angel investment or whatever. I would be highly suspicious of that because they may probably have very different motivations than us.
That is a really good point. Right. You know, it's, when you're servicing a very, very niche group and you want to be servicing a very, very niche group, right? It's not, and then you get an angel investor or this is where this whole idea of like defining what success even means to you, right? Is that like the angel investor is going to say, well, I want to make as big a return on this thing as possible. If that wasn't your initial goal, if your goal is, and here we go talking about goals, is to, I just want to do this thing and I want it to be as sustainable as possible. It's not important to me that I make zillions of dollars off of it. And again, I even get itchy talking about this way because it turns into that 22-year-old 4 o'clock in the morning, somebody just smoked something conversation of, dude, I don't want to wake up 35 and trapped into some job that I hate. I just want to do what I love and I don't care about the future because it's just going to work. You know that conversation that everybody has when they're that age? I don't want to sound like that guy when I start talking about servicing a smaller audience but having it be a sustainable thing. But it feels like it's bound up with that connotation in my head. And so that's why I always get a little hinky about talking about that. I mean, it's like, I guess it's a good thing to remind oneself of that. It's a really good idea to be really explicit about examining what specific goals, not just saying, I want, maybe, here we go, Rob. I'm thinking out loud as I'm doing all this interrupting of myself, but maybe this.
I thought we were going for a crash landing, but now I see the landing gear just came out.
Oh, you called me on it. You called me. That almost was. But the landing gear is coming out. How about this? Mm-hmm. What you were proposing was that the dichotomy that I was creating was not that it's not that I don't want to be famous. It's that I don't want a vague, insincere goal. I want an explicit goal that services the movement that I want to be connected to or the culture that I want to be connected to. And so when someone says, I want to be a famous artist someday, maybe what's bothering me about that is the lack of explicit information and intent in that statement. Did I just say words?
Oh, totally. I can actually phrase that better. I mean, I think, yeah, that brings it full circle. Huh?
I said,
It brings it full circle because you just said it in the way that is like exactly what fits your plan of how you're providing that, how you're showing up to the tribe and what you're trying to provide and why you're doing it. Which someone else who's coming along, it's tough. I mean, so someone's coming to the tribe and says, I don't know, it seems like, God, people are funny what you can associate with stress or what you can associate with a problem, right? I mean, I'm like this all the time where I'll start analyzing a system and make assumptions about it and be like, oh, okay, I would guess something as far as I would bet things would flow better if they happened in this order. Mm-hmm. And totally wrong after examining it because I'm just new to it. But by, you know, at least showing up with something and trying to examine it, I, you know, start piecing the rest together. But no, I thought that was good, Jersey. I think that I think you landed and, you know, now we're just kind of hanging out on the tarmac. So,
and all the luggage came out of the top compartments. Well, you're very generous, Rob. I thank you for that. This folks, for folks who are recommending the show after the fact, say this is the one where you want to stick through the end because there is a payoff there of some sort. But, you know, here's the other takeaway. Now we can get to takeaways as we close out because, yeah, we are coming up on the hour mark. So a couple weeks ago, we did an episode where you were talking about your inhibitions in sharing things sometimes. And like, you'll let like episodes of the Polytechnic Cast stack up and you don't release them. By the way, everybody, if you haven't been listening to Rob Stenzinger's Polytechnic Cast, he's been belting them out like crazy lately, and they're all really good. So good on you for, you know, releasing the Kraken when it comes to the Polytechnic Cast after that discussion. And that discussion was one where that was a topic that was really boiling in my belly for a long time. So I had a lot to say about it, and I felt sure about what I was saying. I was really just reeling. I was buckshotting you. I know there was a couple times where I probably talked for like a full 3 minutes straight, and then you kind of had to go, what do I respond to out of all that, right? So those are episodes where there's a topic that one of us has thought through really hard and is ready to just babble at off the handle about. And then there's ones where it's like, I don't really know how I feel about this. And I, Google Hangouts asking me if I'm still here. There's ones where there's topics where it's like, I haven't really thought this necessarily all the way through. And I don't know if I like what I'm going to find out if we try to unbox this. And we may not be successful in unboxing this. The takeaway there is that this is what it's like living a creative pursuit, is that there are times where, you know, you're going to feel like 100% barreling into it. And there's other times where you're going to be like, I am going to improvise my way through this and see if I come out with any kind of takeaway. Am I going to crash land, or is the landing gear going to pop out the last minute? And if the landing gear pops out, is it still going to be a really bumpy landing where everybody's like, did we really survive today? I think that's worth highlighting too. And that's why I'm going to not ask Rob to re-record this one with me.
That's funny. I think it was a worthwhile journey. And sometimes, you know, you unbox the box and sometimes the box boxes you.
Was that Yakov Smirnoff humor?
I know. Oops. what is this? It's rhetoric, right? I mean, it's worth asking these things and exploring them. And that's an exercise in and of itself. And then that kind of approach is totally something that you'll be doing a lot. And it may be when you're following a creative pursuit and building a creative service and, or, you know, an independent product thing, you'll be facing those things a lot. And, one of my favorite things about podcasting is practicing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
To have an unfair advantage in meetings.
When we do our podcasting episode, we can highlight this one as a case in point for that. that it is a scheduled exercise in rhetoric, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
Plato would be doing it.
All right. Was there any other takeaways this week? We kind of addressed takeaways at the top of the episode when we were talking about the curve ball, didn't we? Like, you know, the takeaway about having a rough week and still pulling yourself together at the last minute for a thing.
Yeah, I think so. I like that. I like this pattern. It's kind of a fun approach that, you know, we'll see how long we keep giving this one a shot at, but I think it works. I mean, it certainly makes it a more intense thought exercise, because we don't just riff on some given thing where all of a sudden it's yellow pencil or whatever, and then then an hour passes. Yeah. But it's because that's great too. But we've added in like a couple of other exercises that sort of sandwich this. So heck, there you go. Yeah. There's your formula for our podcast in a nutshell.
Ex Hunter Co. I think earlier stated that he started a IRC chat. Sorry that I didn't get into it today. We'll try.
Yeah, we'll totally have to do that next time.
Yeah, we'll explore doing an IRC chat in future episodes. An official Lean Into Art one. Figure out how to do it. Rob, I'm sure you know how to start an IRC chat, right? It's been years since I've done it though.
You know, I would have to look it up again, to be honest.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I'm not surprised. I know I would. So okay, well then, how about I say this? If you feel that we landed safely, and if you would fly Lean Into Art Airlines again, then a great way you could let us know that is by going to iTunes, give us a star review. That helps more people find out about the show. If you think the stuff is useful and that more people would benefit from it, it's a simple and anonymous way to give us a pat on the back. It's like giving us a tip, just deciding how many stars we deserve. Maybe go back and listen to, you know, the episode where, what was that one? Roadblocks to Sharing. I think that was a really good episode. Listen to that one, see how you feel afterwards, and you know, give us a rating based on that. Or you could give this video a thumbs up on YouTube if you're watching it on YouTube. That would help more people find this as well. So, and then if you have anything that's eating at you that you would like us to try to walk around and beat on with our cricket bats, you could email us at leanintoart@gmail.com. I know that's in the ending music for the episode every week, but not everybody sticks around to actually hear all the ending music stuff. But then you get to hear Rob say leaners aren't wieners until we come up with a better ending. and we should also point people at that that form that you made to help us find out what to call the Lean Into Art listeners.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're still on the hunt for a nickname.
We haven't mentioned that in a while.
Yeah. It's part of this. You know what? We are all part of this a tribe.
Yep.
And we're, let's see. It's, I know I've phrased it in a few different ways. I don't like my current phrasing, but it's something like at Lean Into Art, we know that you don't strictly need what we're doing, but we want to be useful enough where you choose to, you choose us to help with just leveling up on whatever topic. So the podcast is like our general workout style leveling up. But then we've got the serious stuff in the workshops.
Yep. At leanintoart.com/workshops.
Exactly.
The podcast is us is doing the workout in front of the window of Keith Hafner's karate studio. But then like the full classes are in the back, right?
Exactly.
But I'll warn you, Rob, if you take any of Rob's workshops, it is like the Cobra Kai studio, whereas mine are more like the Mr. Miyagi studio.
True. Pain does not exist in this dojo.
Sweep the leg, no mercy. There was our Karate Kid reference. Okay, now we can end. So, hey, Rob, thank you for being patient with me on this one.
And you know what? Thank you for being patient with me with this one too, Jersey. I mean, I'll take a swing at chewing on the topic, sometimes whiffing it, other times just taking it and running off in a weird direction. You're like, dude, where are you going?
We're going to be reflecting on this one a lot, aren't we? I think we are. Yeah.
So there you go. All right. My pleasure, Jersey. Thank you.
Okay, well, until next time, everybody. Thanks, everybody, who showed up to the live stream. We will be live again next Tuesday at 9:15 p.m. Eastern time on Google Plus. A link will be in the show notes for this episode at leanintoart.com. Until then, everybody, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of interactive-storyteller.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.